On its face, jealousy would seem to be only a destructive emotion, a problem for romantic relationships, a source of stress and resentment in the workplace, even the sandbox. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a guest this hour who says that jealousy isn't all bad. In fact, he will describe the benefits of jealousy and why he says it's one of the central drivers of creativity and civilization. And we will welcome your questions about the so-called green-eyed monster. And maybe you can tell us about a time when you were jealous and something good came out of it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Peter Tuohy, professor of classics in the Department of Greek and Roman Studies at the University of Calgary. He is the author of several books about the nature and history of emotions, most recently, jealousy. Good morning. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joy. It's a pleasure.
So how do we define jealousy? What is jealousy?
It's best not to think about feelings, initially at any rate, because feelings are such murky things. Maybe the simplest way is to describe it, that there's usually three people or two people and a thing are involved. That's easy enough to understand, but this notion of triangles is always important. There's usually a threat involved to one or the other, are people that you're attached to, or even one of the things that you're attached to. This is still within the triangle. So that the triangle threat, and on top of all that, emotions, and here we're talking about feelings a little bit, they have to run very high. If the emotions don't run high, then I guess there's no issue in the existence of the emotion, you ignore it. But so triangles, threat, and a high level of emotion. I think if you talk about anything much else, you get yourself confused with grief, with disappointment, with anger, sorrow, and so on and so forth.
Well, and what about envy? They seem similar. How is jealousy different than envy?
I think that I find it very hard to distinguish them, really. That it's the sort of people who earn their living in the way I do make an easy distinction, but I think real life runs it wrong. But one way of thinking of envy is envy's all about gain. This is the standard way of doing it, whereas jealousy is about loss. So there's three things involved in envy. Often it's two people and a thing, but it can be three people. But you imagine it's somebody else has a car that you particularly admire, your neighbor or a house or whatever it is. You'd like that car. That's usually said to be envy, so you'd like to actually gain. Jealousy is about loss. So if it's in a romantic relationship, it's the loss of another person threatened by the intervention of another person. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I wanted to also talk a little bit about the history of jealousy and which would help us define it a little bit more. We often think of jealousy as the green-eyed monster that rears its head in romantic relationships. First of all, do you know where green-eyed monster came from?
That's Shakespeare. In Othello, he describes it as the green-eyed monster, and I believe, I looked it up last night to remind myself that it's the green, it's green-eyed jealousy he uses elsewhere. But the green-eyed monster's in Othello, the famous play. Yeah. Is there a link to green? I don't know. There's a book just come out by a Frenchman called Pastoureur on the color green, and he doesn't seem to have much to say about jealousy at all. It's as if this link with green is Shakespeare's own doing. Nice. Do you feel there's anything in it?
And but you say that jealousy has a, I don't know, an evolutionary root.
For sure, it does. I think the way to think of it is the jealousy is an emotion. Envy is an emotion. Anger is an emotion. And emotions aren't there for nothing. They're there to protect human beings, to give them an advantage in social circumstances, to guide them on the right course of action. It's a hard one to follow because we've got a long tradition of the Bible urging us against certain types of emotional behaviors, anger, jealousy, envy, and all of these sorts of things. So the instinct is to say, this is a bad thing to feel. Well, no emotion is bad to feel. I think it's what you do with it. If that makes any sense. So if you're feeling jealousy, just as if you're feeling anger, there's a reason for it. And the reason you're probably feeling it is a desire to shore up a relationship, a desire to perhaps do better at work if it's related to a non-romantic context, and so on.
But talk some about how jealousy is, you say, as odd as it may seem, jealousy is the glue that holds the sexes together.
I should say, these are not my words, so don't shoot the messenger on this one. It's something that's argued by people who are particularly interested in genes and the expression of the genes, that how do you cement a relationship that's constantly under stress, whether it's going back 5,000 years or whether it's now. You may be lucky, and happiness is exactly what holds the relationship, but people have a tendency to stray and always did. It's been felt that the use of, or it's been argued by evolutionary psychologists, that jealousy exists to protect the relationships. Why do we need to protect our relationships from this evolutionary point of view, to protect the children, because children have to be looked after, as human children, for such an extraordinarily long time. So that if your partner, I'm a male speaking, so it's if your wife is straying, the jealous reaction comes and you act it out to try and keep your wife faithful, and vice versa. There's been quite a lot of testing on that sort of thing done too. How the emotion works in the brain and so on, but so that it's an evolutionary mechanism, so it's argued, to glue couples together for a longer period of time for the protection and the raising of the children.
Yeah, so it can be argued that jealousy is good because it helped our species survive.
That's right, yes, which is a mechanical argument, but these sorts of Darwinian evolutionary type arguments, what's good for the genes or good for the species, really work like that.
Yeah, but hey, what about Cain and Abel? Somebody didn't live through that.
Yes, it's a different one, isn't it? That because it's we're moving now outside the notion or the idea of the relationship between the sexes, and how we're dealing with people jockeying for a position. Is it in the family, or is it in the workplace, as it were?
Well, certainly that sibling rivalry, according to that Bible story.
So there we're starting to expand the definition of jealousy, aren't we? Well, we never defined it in terms of sexuality, in terms of sex, but that's what we've been talking about to this point. But I guess if you sort of rein it back a little to say, what's common between, say, Cain and Abel and a romantic relationship is that you've got the three people operating, or three entities. In Cain and Abel's case, the two brothers, and, of course, God as the third. And at least one of them is jockeying for preeminence in that relationship. People who are interested in sibling rivalry and the way that children interact in families would say, it has a parallel in their own experience. It doesn't have to be brother and sister or brother and brother. It could be just let's say, the mother or the father looking after the child with a friend there speaking, and the child will often squawk, kick, try and intervene to gain the attention of the parent, which is a little bit like what's happening in the Cain and Abel story.
Isn't I'm sorry. You think we didn't define romantic jealousy?
No, not at all. I just wanted to be. I just wanted to try and draw the link between romantic jealousy and this sort of sibling rivalry, to say that they're, the way I defined it, pretty much the same thing exactly. So,
yes. Yeah, and then, of course, we have the jealousy that we might experience, for example, I don't know, at the workplace, that I'm jealous that my coworker seems to be getting raises and praise and flowers, and I'm not.
It's pretty common, isn't it? And it's a natural feeling. It drives you to try a bit, work a bit harder. It's the simplest way to understand that, isn't it? If that's the case, is that a bad thing? I suppose it depends on how much you let the emotion overwhelm you, how much you act that emotion out. If you're starting to spike the drinks of your co-workers, it's gone too far, hasn't it? But if it makes you strive a little harder, then it's probably a good thing.
We are talking with Peter Tuohy. He is the author of Jealousy. And we are talking about the history, the meaning, and we'll talk more about the value of jealousy. So do you think that jealousy can be a good thing? Do you agree that jealousy can be beneficial? Have you ever been jealous of a partner or a family member or maybe a professional colleague? Did it lead to something good? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. If you have a question or some sort of experience related to jealousy that you would like to convey. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. When was the last time you were jealous? Do you get jealous? Do you think there's anything right with jealousy? Our guest is defending jealousy as one of the central drivers of creativity and civilization. He is the author of the book Jealousy, and we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Peter Tuohy is a professor of classics in the Department of Greek and Roman Studies at the University of Calgary. He is the author of several books about the nature and history of emotions. Well, let's talk a little bit about why you say good things can come of jealousy, Peter Tuohy.
We've talked a little bit about that, I guess, in relationship to romantic relationships, the way that jealousy can sometimes act as a bonding agent. I think what I didn't say there, and the suspicion that most of your listeners would have, and I would if I were listening to myself, is well, doesn't it always lead to punch-ups, to harm, partners beating one another and so on and so forth? Well, I would say to that, not necessarily. They're the ones you hear about, the violent acting outs of romantic jealousy. The times where it works successfully makes people rethink their relationship, become perhaps sulky, but maybe even not that, simply rethink and try and act upon it. We're never going to know about those because people are never going to report them. They're never going to discuss them because they're not embarrassed, because they're embarrassing. Who wants to admit to feeling like that, not feeling in control? But I think in our own lives, we know just how often that's been the case. So that's one way that I think that it is particularly important. But the workplace as well is very important.
And I mean, talking about, well, why is it that we do hear about these instances, though, when jealousy causes us to punch out the other person or to cause some sort of harm? I mean, it means that jealousy does have a dark side.
It does. I think I'd say to that all emotions have a dark side if they're, except perhaps for happiness, and maybe too much happiness is not a good thing. The insecurity that you're going to talk about later in the day is a driver for creativity and action, and happiness perhaps isn't. It can make you too placid. But sticking with jealousy, I think just like anger, if it's acted out, if it gets out of control, it's always a bad thing. If it doesn't cause fights, it's going to cause personal harm to yourself experiencing it. One of the confusing elements of it, there is a medical condition sometimes called Othello syndrome, named after Othello, that's likely, as far as I can tell, from reading about it, it's the product of actual physical brain damage in the frontal area of the brain, so that people are not registering the proper status of their relationship. This can often lead to horrendous violence. More men than women, that is to say, acting the violence out. But what do you make of a situation like that? Well, to even discuss it, in a sense, in the same way as jealousy is probably, or the jealousy we all feel is probably not the correct sort of thing to do, because it's a physical brain problem we're dealing with there. I don't know whether that helps.
So really, there's a brain problem with the dark side of jealousy?
Well, no, only with some people, and it usually mostly occurs with much older people, though it can be linked with Parkinson's disease and so on. When it's linked to dementia, obviously, it's occurring with people in much older, late 60s, often 70s, but no less violent.
Yeah, yeah, and when you mentioned our program later today, dealing with how insecurity can help the creative process, I often think of jealousy as someone who is insecure, or not trusting. For example, in romantic jealousy, if you trust your partner, if you are secure in your relationship, you're not going to be jealous because you're not going to think that partner is going to stray.
I'd say that's the case, but what if the partner is straying?
Well, then he's the louse.
it's the case, but you may love him anyway, and there may be a chance of restoring the relationship, and you may do the sort of mental calculation and say, I'd sooner it survive than go to the dogs. You're naturally feeling jealous. It's going to make you move into overdrive. I would hope not in the violent sense, but in the way of testing and trying to reestablish the relationship. And if you do, I guess it's going to take a while for things to settle down, but maybe it'll be a good thing. Perhaps it'll strengthen the relationship. Perhaps part of the straying was your fault.
What?
Well, it can be. I mean, you can be an extremely neglectful person without knowing it. You can be too driven by your own career designs, your own sense of self-importance that you neglect your partner.
Yeah. So you're saying that, again, you can do a little bit of self-examination and can improve your own qualities, improve your relationship if jealousy is a part of it.
Yes, that's right. Well, jealousy, I think it's not so much that jealousy is a part of it, but the jealousy is there to drive you to actually consider the relationship. Is it worth saving? Is it worth, should it be abandoned? I think that's what it can help you with at that point of view. Painful and all of that sort of thing, but nonetheless, it's there for a purpose, just in the same way happiness, insecurity, anger, surprise, pride, and all of these sort of things are designed to help people negotiate the sort of the thickets of human relationships.
I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Peter Tuohy. He is the author of the book Jealousy, and it's an examination of the emotion, jealousy, and the meaning of it, the history of it, and the value of it. Peter Tuohy, arguing that jealousy is not a bad thing or entirely a bad thing, that jealousy is actually helping us. Talking about some of the benefits of jealousy, and we're welcoming your questions and maybe some of your own examples if you care to. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Jody in Madison asks, is jealousy more or less common in adults who were not oldest or only children? I guess I'm having a little difficulty with that, too. But can you address jealousy? I think we're talking about, is it more common in some people than others?
Yeah, maybe too. Is it more common with first children, middle children, last children, that sort of thing? And is it more common? Is it as common in children as, so two questions, perhaps. Is it as common in children as adults? I don't know about the position in families, if that's what's being got at. You get the feeling that firstborn children are perhaps, because they're so often type A's, they're less prone to it. The younger children, the middle, or perhaps the youngest, say if there's three children or so in a family, might be because they're in a more dependent position. They have to jockey more, so they feel, rightly or wrongly, for the attention of their parents. I think that's what you might say there. Is it as common in children? I think it's important. It's a really important question, because the difficulty with... It's terribly interesting to talk about jealousy and sexual relations, but it's probably just as common in small children. And the sort of research that people who work in child psychology do now say it's almost, well, to say ubiquitous would be the wrong thing for me, a non-psychologist, to say, but that it's extraordinarily common with small children. So this is an emotion that's not, Shakespeare's green-eyed monster occurring in sexual relations. It's also extremely common in children. The children, of course, are trying to guarantee the attention and the care of their parents. And I think at the same time, what we might need to emphasize there is people who work in animal behavior, it's much more argued, this one, but argue that it's common in animals as well. I think anybody who's, I wouldn't go for cats here, but anybody who's owned dogs a lot in their lives feels they've seen it again and again and again.
Oh, sure. I've had two dogs at once, and I mean, it doesn't have to be two dogs, I guess, but I have seen, if you're petting one dog, the other dog comes over and starts trying to get in on the action, and you sense there's a jealousy going on.
Yes, absolutely. They shove their nuzzle under your hand, don't they, to try and push the other one away. Same sort of thing can happen with two people and a dog, can't it?
We had a dog that used to growl when my husband would come to bed because the dog was on the bed.
I don't know what... I mean, there's your three elements of the relationship.
Right.
Heightened emotion. And
it was a dominance thing, I think, going on there. But
I think so. There might be not dominance so much as the animal feels that its position of what have been, not the top dog, but the important person in your life, if you were in bed first, that's what it's trying to guarantee. So don't shut me out of the threefold equation.
Yeah, it could be. So but talk some about, I'm thinking also of, placement in the family, what good comes out of, for example, my older sister being jealous when, as the baby of the family, I kind of displaced her for, the mom's time and attention and, the baby can do no wrong kind of attitude?
Well, I think the what good comes out of it? Well, it's easy to imagine, is it not, a child being neglected in some situations like this. It never happens to us. We're great to all of our children, but it's easy to imagine it happening, isn't it? And in a sense, it must be even easier to imagine or to fear if you're a particularly small, defenseless little creature. You see the center of your life, whichever parent it is, but usually the mother, you see this person lavishing attention on something else smaller or larger or even a friend. And you think, my goodness me, am I going to be locked out of the equation? Am I going to be fed as well? And so on. Now, I don't think you can ever say a very small child, I mean, you know, 10 months, can do wrong. They're simply acting in the way that evolution's programmed them to do. They're trying to protect themselves. So placement matters, and your reaction is the reaction of the younger child is not wrong, nor of the older child. It's
no.
what they do with it, isn't it?
Right, and that's so I think it is understandable that an older child might think, oh, you know, gosh, I'm not, you know, I'm being neglected to some extent, or I'm not being fawned upon as much as I used to be. And I think we understand that. But I guess I was trying to think, can anything positive come of that kind of jealousy, you know, when it comes to sibling rivalry?
Well, I think what I was trying to do was say that the positive thing is the child's trying to guarantee its position within the family. It's trying to remind the parent, the caretakers, that it's just as important and needs the attention. And there's the important thing. We do it whether we like it or not. That is to say, to jockey for this sort of position within the family. So I think that in itself is one of the positive things. The simpler positives of the jealous relationship, I guess, there you have to move into the workplace or to some of the experiments that people have done with animals in sort of artificially induced situations.
Here's a comment from Kate on Facebook. If at any point in my relationship I realize I am no longer jealous, then I have stopped caring about the relationship. She goes on, but what's your response to that?
It, goodness me, you know, here you've got a classics professor from the prairies. I mean, what would I know about such things? But my instinct would be to say that if it no longer affects you, you probably stopped caring. I don't know. What would you feel in her?
Well, I think she's saying that she's defending jealousy too as a positive thing that says that if you care about your relationship, you're going to be somewhat jealous.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, no jealousy, no care, I would think. So
yeah.
If you're worried about the absence of it, if your partner is playing around, then it doesn't sound terribly good for the longevity of the relationship, I'd have said.
She goes on to say that jealousy pushes me to work on areas of myself that make me feel inferior to someone else. And that is part of your defense of jealousy, is it not?
Yes, I'd say it's a pity it has to be a sense of inferiority, that it may be that what you need to work on is bad behavior in your own case, which mightn't be extreme, but as I say, it could be, you know, work, neglect, and so on and so forth. Just a lack of general politeness and thoughtfulness leads your partner to think you don't really care that very much. So I think that's not inferiority so much as a lack of relationship skills, perhaps.
Yeah, and we've talked some about how jealousy is is important evolution-wise, and that this very well could be why why we have survived. But you also say it's a central driver of creativity. Talk a little bit more about that. How is jealousy a central driver of creativity?
I think this is one of these arguments. You can't say why it is so much as yes, it happens. That you look at creative types and you think that anybody who could write Anna Karenina or or somebody like Jonathan Franzen must be able to stand above these sorts of emotions that I talk about here. Yet it appears that in most creative lives, the sense of competitiveness, the sense of envy directed towards other people's successes, is one of the is constantly present and seems to drive them on. Lots of people listening will have seen at some point or another Amadeus and Mozart's the poisonous relationship in the film, at any rate, that Salieri had with Mozart. Did that make Salieri compose a bit harder? I expect it did. You get the same sort of thing with F. Scott Fitzgerald, maybe not so much in his case, and Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway's drive to become a better writer, a more prominent writer than his friend who actually introduced him to his publisher, seems to be a constant part of his earlier years.
We are talking with Peter Tuohy. He is the author of Jealousy, and we are talking about the upside of jealousy and how jealousy has aided us, society, in our creativity, our civilization itself. And we welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Is jealousy good for us? Do you have any thoughts or questions on that? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about jealousy. We're talking about the value of jealousy. Do you see any value in jealousy? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Peter Tuohy is a professor of classics in the Department of Greek and Roman Studies at the University of Calgary, author of several books on the nature and history of emotions, most recently, jealousy. And he is talking with us about how jealousy is at the core of our modern culture, our creativity, and our civilization. And we wonder if you agree or not, or examples you might have that you'd like to share, or questions that you might have. Tony in Madison is with us. Hello, Tony.
Hello. I totally disagree there's jealousy between siblings. What are you going to do, leave the family? Secondly, if it's between boyfriend or girlfriend, or if you're of the same sex, jealousy serves no purpose, and harmful things can happen. I can't see of any positive things occurring during jealousy. If there is a husband or wife, or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, if one of them is cheating, and you become jealous because they obviously must like another person more, then you leave that relationship. I can't see of any positive value.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter Tuohy, what's your response to that?
I think it's a natural response, isn't it? And it makes perfect sense that if somebody is cheating on you, your initial response is going to be to leave them. But I guess you're balancing up the losses. If it's a family, the losses with the gains. If it's a family, you may want to say to yourself, well, is it going to be better within the family if I try and investigate the cause of this? Give my partner a second chance for the benefit of the children. then it may be cementing things. Maybe the relationship is too far gone for it to be repaired. But I don't believe that in all cases the cheating necessarily points to sort of absolute dereliction and craziness on the part of the person cheating. They may have been driven to it. There's no blanket answer to this, I would think. But to go back to it, I'm more concerned about the feeling of the emotion and the way that you act to the feeling than the acting out of it, always, I think.
Next, let's go to Jill in Arborvitae. Hi, Jill.
Well, hi there. We're driving in the car and listening to you folks talk, and the word admiration came up in our conversation on this end of the phone. And how do you think the word admiration plays against the word jealousy and envy?
Do you mean that a person you admire is somebody you're not going to ever feel jealous of? Is that what you're...
Yes, I think it's a positive way of appreciating the gifts that someone else has. My mother-in-law is a great example. As a young teenager, I first met her, and I wasn't jealous of her beauty, and I wasn't envious of her strength as a woman in the 60s. I admired her beauty, and I admired her strength as a woman.
So not jealous, but you can admire someone but not be jealous of them.
Yes, I think that absolutely, and that probably speaks to your own broadness of sympathy too, I think. There's no doubt some people are by nature a little more jealous in the sort of situations that you're talking about than others. That nothing is as cut and dried, I suppose, as I'd make it. Can you make yourself more admiring of people rather than jealous of them? I'd hope so. Are we born more admiring than jealous? I doubt it. I'd like to think I could learn to be more admiring of people in just the way you're talking about. The situation you discussed, however, didn't involve any strong sense of threat, I would think. It was your aunt, I think you're referring to, but would a much younger person normally feel threatened there? That's all I would say to that. You remove the sense of strong threat, you remove the strong emotion in the triangle that you're speaking about, but admiration sounds pretty good to me.
So how else is jealousy beneficial for our culture?
I think it's maybe we should go to the experiment that the animal psychologist Franz De Waal, who works in Emory, did. He had two groups of Capuchin monkeys, and they were in cages, and there's two parts of the triangle. The third part was the lab attendant. Both groups were fed in their cages, and they could see one another, the monkeys in this experiment. They could see what each were eating. They were given usually cucumbers, poor little creatures, and cucumbers are okay, but there's a limit. And at one point in the daily routine of the Capuchin monkeys, one cage was given grapes, which apparently Capuchins greatly love. And the other cage continued with its diet of cucumbers. Now, in that case, what they observed was that the cucumber monkeys went a little crazy when this action was repeated, rattled the cages, tried to get out, reached their little arms out to bash their lab carer. What Franz De Waal, and I think her name was Patricia Brosnan, the person who worked with him on this experiment, what they concluded was just that this is a case of jealousy. We've got heightened emotions, we've got a threat, we've got the triangle. What the cucumber monkey's violent reaction is trying to do here is to reestablish social justice. This was De Waal's conclusion, that what the cucumber Capuchins were saying was, we're all in this together. Don't we deserve grapes together, or don't we all deserve cucumbers together? Now, I think they deserved grapes as well. But you can see this is an induced animal situation for jealousy. And what De Waal concludes from this is that the cucumber monkeys were jockeying for social justice.
I saw that video on social media, and it's actually hilarious. I mean, it's sad and funny at the same time, because the monkey who felt he was being treated unfairly actually started throwing the cucumbers at the lab attendant, and it makes you think about fairness and social justice, and so that can be the positive aspect of this.
Yes, that really is. That leads us into all the anger all of us felt in 2008 in the financial crash, and so on. That some people were getting grapes while we all got pretty moldy cucumbers. And in a sense, why would you throw your cucumber out of the cage? I mean, if you do that, you've got nothing to eat. But that's what you feel like doing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You punish yourself to get social justice. The paradox in all of this is that we're still dealing with the same situation, are we not? And probably because you define emotions by situations and reactions, we're dealing with the same sort of thing that you feel in a sexual relationship or if you're a small child and so on. But here it's working, you'd hope, for the benefit of the monkeys.
Well, you know, you can talk some more if you see jealousy you're playing a role in our politics today.
It's less easy for me to talk really comprehensively, because we're hearing a Canadian Australian here, so it's a bit of a distance. But one example that was often brought up or raised to me was Lyndon Johnson and JF Kennedy, that in the biographies of Lyndon Johnson, it's often stressed the extreme jealousy he felt against Kennedy, wanting the position of president himself and so on. Now, I think it's not envy here, because the emotion seems to have been so powerful from what I've read that it was almost pathological. It's harmful then, isn't it? Because we have to control these sorts of things, but maybe if he'd kept a bit of a grip on it, it might have made him work harder. But there you've got the same situation, but playing out in a completely different way than with the monkeys.
Yeah. I guess I'm also thinking of, I don't know, I'm trying to think, like protests or people who are advocating for a higher minimum wage, for example, or other policies that might lift the boat for everybody. Do you see a role of jealousy in those types of movements?
It certainly you can easily draw the parallel to the monkeys, can't you? Mm-hmm. That you've got you've got three elements, don't you? One of which is the wage, one is the people jockeying for a better minimum wage, and another force, whoever they are, saying, no, we're going to make profits, let's keep it down. Emotions run high in this, because people have to feed their families, put bread on the table. And there is a threat, isn't there, that if you allow, or a feeling of a threat, that if you allow the bosses, as it were, to set the rates as they wish, that you're going to lose less bread on the table, if bread at all. So I think it's an exact parallel, and that links with one of the themes you mentioned at the beginning, that it's actually part of our civilizing process, jealousy, when it's taken to this sort of level.
Next we go to Steve in Wausau. Hello, Steve.
Hi, great show. Thanks for taking my call. I just have the positive and a negative. One that comes to mind is if you're in a race, for instance, the quote is, if you can't win the race, make sure you make them set the world record. And that would be a positive thing of envy or jealousy. You're competitive. And I think the other one was, if if you're jealous, jealousy is like an acid. It destroys the vessel from within. I thought those were two good quotes.
Go ahead, Peter Tui.
The acid one first, if that's okay. We're talking about lack of self-control here, and I think any emotion, as I've been trying to say, any emotion that gets out of hand, that's not controlled, is acidic in just the way you're saying it. Jealousy is such an obvious one, isn't it, because of Othello and your own, everybody's own lives. But yes, it does. It eats the vessel out from within inside. There's no doubt about it. You have to exercise self-control over any strong emotion. The business of the race, that's sort of back to the admiration theme that we had mentioned earlier on by an earlier caller. That's pretty good, isn't it? That's a complete absence of jealousy there. A desire to see everybody do well rather than just yourself.
So as we are running short of time, is there what is the takeaway for our listeners, for your readers, when it comes to jealousy?
I think jealousy, like many other emotions, and the last one, the one I wrote about before this was boredom, that there are a lot of emotions that we feel profound embarrassment and shame for feeling. And I think it does us no good to feel bad about experiencing these emotions. I'm not talking about acting them out here, as I've been stressing, but feeling them is no bad thing. And in some way or another, the takeaway is that you need to come to terms with the existence of this emotion in yourself. It can be beneficial. It can help you prosper if it's managed in a correct manner.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. Pleasure.
Peter Tui is the author of Jealousy. He's a professor of classics in the Department of Greek and Roman Studies at the University of Calgary. He is the author of several books about the nature and history of emotions, most recently, Jealousy. And we thank him very much for his time and for your participation. Thanks as well to Christy Taylor and to Brianne Chasso for producing and directing this program. I hope you join us tomorrow at this time. It's another edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be here to answer your personal finance questions, and we will be asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio starting tomorrow at 8 o'clock. It's our end of the year pledge drive. One more opportunity for you to support Wisconsin Public Radio with a pledge of financial support. And during On Your Money, a special thank you gift for a pledge of any amount. That's tomorrow during On Your Money here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.